This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Blackwater USA, the company at the center of an angry controversy in Iraq, is one of several private security firms that operate there. Its employees, many of them former soldiers and policemen, are paid handsomely to protect American interests and American officials, including the U.S. ambassador. Altogether, tens of thousands of these independent contractors are in Iraq. In the last few days, they've come under new scrutiny. On Sunday, several Iraqi civilians were killed by Blackwater personnel. The company says it regrets the loss of life, but that those civilians were in fact insurgents who fired first. The Iraqi government disagrees, and it claims a couple and their infant were among the victims. Blackwater, it says, should be expelled from the country. The U.S. has launched an investigation of its own. Critics charge that firms like Blackwater USA often fire first and ask questions later, and they that they're above the law, immune from prosecution. Later in the hour, NPR's political junkie joins us, so if you have questions about the politics of the attorney general nomination, Hillary Care dueling ads from MoveOn.org and Rudy Giuliani, or about which candidate might get the endorsement of the National Rifle Association, give us an email, talk@npr.org. But first, private security firms in Iraq. If you have questions about how they operate and what they do, or if you've worked as a military contractor in Iraq, give us a call, 800-989-8255, email us, talk@npr.org, and you can comment on our blog. That's at npr.org/blog of the nation. We begin with Sarah Percy, who's the author of a forthcoming history of private security firms called Mercenaries, and she joins us from the studios of the BBC in Oxford, England. And thanks very much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
And I gather that the number of private security contractors in Iraq is open to dispute.
It is. You know, it really depends on who's counting and exactly what they're counting. So you hear numbers as large as 50,000, and you hear numbers which are even larger than that, upwards of 70,000 and almost 100,000. So there really aren't precise figures out there about how many of these contractors are operating in Iraq.
And what do they do?
They do a whole range of tasks, which is part of the reason why it's so difficult to count them. They do everything from interrogation to translation to landmine clearance, and then the more controversial stuff, which is the stuff which has gotten Blackwater in the news, which is armed guarding of people and installations.
And is this, in a sense, using these private contractors to do tasks that you would ordinarily expect a military to do?
Absolutely. These are all jobs that used to be performed by the regular military itself, and they've been devolved into the private sector. And that obviously creates a whole host of potential issues, because when they're done by the military has a set of rules that helps deal with any potential problems. And for a long time, there were no rules at all in Iraq. And now what we have is a series of sort of ad hoc application of existing rules to try and fill in the gaps that might be causing problems with these companies.
And we'll get to those legal complications in just a second. But I wanted to clarify, in those figures as high as 100,000, does that include people who might be, serving troops lunch?
No. You see, this is part of the trick, is that though certainly the numbers that range from 20 to 50 to 60, those are trying to count armed contractors, so okay, people who are in the business where they're actually carrying weapons.
And then we get to the legal controversy and something known as Order 17. What is
yes.
that and how does it apply?
Well, it's an order that was first issued by the Coalition Provisional Authority. And what it does is it immunizes these contractors from prosecution in Iraq. And these are quite normal things to happen. They happen as part of status of forces agreements whenever U.S. or multinational troops are operating in a foreign theater. It's quite usual to have personnel immunized from local prosecution. And the rationale here is that you don't want people to be tried by a kangaroo court or in a country with a weak judicial system. Mm-hmm. The difficulty is, of course, that it obviously creates this most enormous loophole whereby contractors in Iraq may not be prosecuted by anyone if they misbehave on the battlefield, because there's no applicable international law. So the only law out there that could apply is U.S. law to these contractors.
And so if they're not going to be prosecuted by the U.S., certainly they don't come under military law, they're not in uniform.
Well, you know, that's the matter of some controversy. There are two ways that they might be prosecuted under military law. One is through the Uniform Code of Military Justice. In late 2006, early 2007, an amendment was put through to the Uniform Code of Military Justice. And that's the instrument that allows court-martials for regular soldiers. They added a line which seems to indicate that contractors could be caught up in it. But again, there are a number of potential loopholes, and many lawyers think it's certainly very open to challenge if a contractor were to be prosecuted using that instrument. There
have been extraordinary cases, rape cases, for example, in Okinawa against U.S. military personnel, where the United States has agreed to allow the accused to stand trial in a local Okinawan court. Might that be a precedent?
Certainly it could be. I mean, again, the difficulty there is if it's regular serving personnel, the U.S. has more authority in making that sort of offer. But certainly it could be. But the Iraq judicial system, like the rest of the country, is being rebuilt. Japan has a very robust legal system, and Iraq at the moment does not. So it's putting an enormous amount of pressure on Iraqis to try people that they may not actually be capable of trying in any fair way.
And does any U.S. government agency keep track of where these people are, what they're doing, how many of them are, you know, what their operations look like?
To an extent, the GAO does.
Government Accounting Office.
That's right. It keeps a general track of how many contractors there are and what sorts of jobs they're doing. The problem is it's an enormously complicated industry, because what often happens is one company will subcontract to another company. And so we're not entirely sure how many people are operating, because the whole web is so complicated. In addition to this, in both Iraq and in Afghanistan, there are quite a large number of indigenous private security companies, so mom-and-pop operations who are operating in Iraq who are also on the scene. So again, it's very hard to distinguish between who is being employed by which agency or which government. So one of the real problems in policy is that there's a lack of a centralized system providing oversight and therefore providing accountability.
We're talking with Sarah Percy, a university lecturer and fellow in international relations at Merton College, Oxford, author of the forthcoming book, Mercenaries, The History of a Norm in International Relations. 800-989-8255 if you'd like to join the conversation. Email us, talk@npr.org. And let's go to Josiah. Josiah is calling us from Cheshire in Connecticut.
Hello, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I had a comment and a question. The comment is, I was delighted to hear the title of your guest's book, because I feel like by not calling these mercenaries what they are, we're tidying over, we're making things seem neater and more corporate than they really are, because these, as far as I can tell, these are mercenaries. And the question that I had is wondering whether the outsourcing of traditionally military functions to these mercenary organizations is disguising the cost of the war in terms of human life. And because we don't hear about the casualties, deaths and wounded from these independent contractors or mercenaries. And
well,
I wondered,
we certainly did when some Blackwater personnel were killed in Fallujah and hung from a bridge, which caused a big controversy a few years ago. But anyway, Sarah Percy, mercenaries, is that the right word?
Well, it's interesting that companies themselves tend to get very agitated when they hear the mercenary word. They don't like it because, of course, it's a very loaded word. It carries with it all sorts of negative connotations. And they'll tell you that what the reason why they're different from mercenaries is because they don't engage in the offensive use of force. So while they're in Iraq, they're not out there fighting missions. They're standing as guards. But as the incident on Sunday demonstrates, there's a very fine line between offensive and defensive action. What looks to you and I, like shooting on a crowd might be fairly offensive, can be classed as a defensive action. So it's really tricky. The companies themselves don't use the term. Legally, the term is a bit tricky because mercenary has a very precise meaning in international law, and these companies don't fall under the term. But certainly, a case could be made to call them mercenaries. And in terms of the human cost, it's enormous. While the original Blackwater situation, where the contractors were killed, did generate a huge amount of attention. As of December, there were at least 600 contractors who had been killed in Iraq. And when you consider the amount of press we get when certain tallies are reached, so when the first 500 battle deaths, first 1,000 battle deaths, we will have reached all of those targets sooner if you count contractors as part of the total. The other thing is even if we take the low end of these numbers, so even if we presume, say, there's 30,000 armed contractors in Iraq, that's 30,000 more people the U.S. Army would have to recruit if they didn't use contractors. So the human cost of the war in that sense is also much higher.
Mm. Thanks for the call, Josiah.
Thank you.
Well, let's bring in Jeremy Scahill. He's the author of Blackwater, The Rise of the World's Most Powerful Mercenary Army. He's with us from our bureau in New York, and it's nice to have you on Talk of the Nation today.
Thank you, Neil.
Blackwater USA, tell us a little bit more about its specific missions among all these other groups.
Well, Blackwater stands out in Iraq because it is basically the official mercenary company of the U.S. government. It provides elite bodyguard services for the senior U.S. occupation officials, including the ambassador, Ryan Crocker. And when Condoleezza Rice comes and visits Iraq, she's guarded by the men of Blackwater USA, as well as congressional delegations. And Blackwater, over the past 4 years, has succeeded in keeping alive every single U.S. ambassador, beginning with its initial $27 million no-bid contract to guard Paul Bremer. And in the process of doing that, Blackwater's lost about 30 of its operatives in Iraq. And I actually want to correct something. We know that over 1,000 contractors have been killed in Iraq right now, and it definitely masks the human costs of the war. But Blackwater is not just some company, and it's enormously important that the Iraqi government is taking on this exact firm, because expelling Blackwater means you're saying to Ryan Crocker, we want your personal bodyguards out of the country.
And it's also Blackwater to be, it operates in other countries besides Iraq.
Absolutely. Blackwater boasts of active operations in 9 countries around the world. It's certainly active in Afghanistan, Kuwait, Jordan. It's been active in Azerbaijan and the Caspian Sea, not far from the Iranian border, where it set up a command and control center and trained an elite unit of the Azerbaijani Navy.
Let's take a break. We're talking with Jeremy Scahill. He's the author of Blackwater, The Rise of the World's Most Powerful Mercenary Army, and with Sarah Percy. Her forthcoming book is Mercenaries, The History of a Norm in International Relations. If you'd like to join the conversation, our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. You can also send us an email, talk@npr.org. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Ken Rudin will be here a little later in the hour. If you have questions for the Political Junkie, you can go ahead and send them by email now. Our address is talk@npr.org. Right now, our focus is on private contractors working in Iraq, and specifically Blackwater USA, whose personnel were involved in an incident in Baghdad on Sunday. The Iraqi government says as many as 20 civilians were killed, including a couple and their infant who were killed in a car. We invited a representative from Blackwater to join us. They instead sent us this statement. Blackwater's independent contractors acted lawfully and appropriately in response to a hostile attack in Baghdad on Sunday. Initial press accounts were inaccurate. For instance, the helicopters providing aerial support never fired weapons. There has been no official action by the Ministry of the Interior regarding plans to revoke licensing. The quote-unquote civilians reportedly fired upon by Blackwater professionals were in fact armed enemies, and Blackwater personnel returned defensive fire. Blackwater regrets any loss of life, but this convoy was violently attacked by armed insurgents, not civilians, and our people did their job to defend human life. Again, that's a statement from Blackwater USA. Our guests are Dr. Sarah Percy, author of the upcoming book Mercenaries, The History of a Norm in International Relations. Also with us, Jeremy Scahill. He's the author of Blackwater, The Rise of the World's Most Powerful Mercenary Army. He's also a contributing writer to The Nation magazine. If you'd like to join the conversation, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email us, talk@npr.org. And let's turn to, this is Alex. Alex is calling us from Las Vegas.
Yes, sir. I had a quick question for your callers. Actually, it's a two-part question. I'm pretty familiar with the industry. Worked for the federal government for about 4 or 5 years now in security services. And with the growing trend of using military service providers and military support providers, such as Blackwater, Armored Group, Alpha Incorporated, have there been any resource concessions made in Iraq to pay these companies contractually or to uphold contractual obligations? And then my second point
I didn't quite understand that, Alex. What do you mean by resource concessions?
Well, it was pretty popular, I guess, back when the industry of military service providers became, a growing trend to pay these companies off through concessions and resources that the host country had available to them, i.e., oil or
timber.
I mean, any kind of resource like that.
I see.
So does that make clear?
Oh, yes, it does. And
okay, great.
Why don't we do one of these at a time, all right?
Okay, great.
All right. Can you help us out on that, Jeremy Scahill?
Yes. Well, we do know that about 25% of the billions of dollars allocated for Iraq reconstruction ends up going now to private security, either to protect convoys of supplies crossing the country or to protect other interests. And Blackwater alone is not working for the U.S. military in Iraq. Many people make that mistake. Blackwater is actually working for the U.S. State Department in Iraq, providing what is called diplomatic security services. And the company has been awarded about $800 million in contracts just for that work.
So it wouldn't be getting concessions from the Iraqi government because it doesn't work for the Iraqi government.
Well, this comes out of a different pot, although I spent quite a bit of time trying to figure out where the money that's being paid to Blackwater comes from. And ultimately, the answer came from the U.S. State Department. They said that it was being paid out of the Iraq supplemental funding bills.
And Sarah Percy, might other companies be getting some of those resource concessions that Alex is talking about?
I don't think that it's such common practice in the private security industry post-2001. It was very common practice in the late 1990s when we had companies operating in places like Sierra Leone and Angola. It was a very common way for these companies to get paid. But now I think more of the funding is, in a sense, more straightforward because it's coming directly from the coffers of the hiring state, in this case, the United States.
And Alex, your other question?
Yes, sir, actually. Thank you very much. My second question is just if you can forecast on the growing trend again. It's become pretty common to outsource military service providers and military services. How about for intelligence resources and intelligence gathering bodies such as AirScan? I know is a popular one to work with signals intelligence and imagery intelligence. I wonder if there's a growing trend of that and if you're starting to see that in Iraq or just nationwide globally.
Sarah Percy, you said earlier one of the things that these contractors do is interrogations.
Yeah, and of course, most controversially and most famously at Abu Ghraib prison, contractors were involved in the interrogations there. Certainly, all of these companies are seeking to diversify. A large number of them are based in the UK, in London, and many of those companies already provide a certain degree of intelligence services, and I know a couple of them are looking to provide more down the track.
And Jeremy, were you trying to get in on this?
Right. I mean, right now, about 70% of the U.S. National intelligence budget is farmed out to private companies. In fact, Blackwater USA recently started its own privatized intelligence company called Total Intelligence Solutions, and it's being headed up by a 30-year veteran of the CIA, a man named Kofor Black, who was heading the hunt for Osama bin Laden in the aftermath of 9/11 and was one of the key people involved with the government-sanctioned torture program known as Extraordinary Rendition. This is a huge industry right now, and certainly Iraq is the playground. But let's be clear here. There are 630 companies working for the U.S. government in Iraq, and there are about 180 mercenary companies providing services in that country right now. But this is much bigger than Iraq. I mean, that's almost as many companies as there are nations registered at the U.N. It raises serious questions about the existence of the nation-state monopoly over the use of force.
Mm-hmm. Thanks very much for the call, Alex.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye. Let's turn to, this is Michael. Michael with us from Brattleboro in Vermont.
Yes, thanks very much for taking my call.
Sure.
I think this is mostly, I'd be really curious to hear how Jeremy responds to this question. In I believe it was 2003, Paul McGough, who was a writer for the Sydney Morning Herald, reported that the just about become prime minister of Iraq, Iyad Alawi, when touring a prison with his American security detachment, private security firm, executed six prisoners at a southern Iraq prison, maybe using the pistol of one of his security detachment to execute six untried prisoners by shooting them in the head. And then his security detachment disposed of the bodies with apparently... this being all covered up and the witnesses later disappearing. Paul reported on this and then had to flee Iraq for his life. Do you happen to know if that incident and its cover-up and the participating security guard at Blackwater?
I was aware of the allegation against Iyad Alawi. I have no information about who the individuals around him were or if the story ended up being proven true. I can't comment on that. I just don't know.
I remember the allegation as well, and also a subsequent allegation that it was sort of fabricated to make Iyad Alawi, or maybe it did happen, who knows, but fabricated to make Iyad Alawi look tough. So
I do recall Alyssa Rubin made that allegation, and later she actually communicated to me by email that she knew it was not a fabrication.
Yep.
And I passed that on to the LA Times.
All right.
But in retrospect, part of my question was the fact that it seemed like other Iraqi officials were also being protected by American security firms, and you did refer to their use protecting American security officials. I was wondering how many Iraqi officials in general are protected by American security firms.
Sarah Percy, what do you think?
Well, certainly several are. I think Jeremy may have better and more recent data on that. But the other thing, which is very much worth pointing out, is that it's not just a case of these people operating in Iraq at the behest of the American government. They're also providing security for a wide range of other actors, everyone from non-governmental organizations to media news outlets to being associated as well with the British military. So this is, again, it's an incredibly complex problem because there are so many people hired by so many employers working in Iraq.
Jeremy, how did Blackwater go from a small company in North Carolina to this important firm that's taking such a prominent role?
Right. I mean, Blackwater's sort of meteoric ascent to prominence within the occupation of Iraq and the broader war on terror is actually interesting because it's one of several companies whose livelihood was essentially guaranteed by the outbreak of the war. Blackwater started as a firearms law enforcement training facility and a sort of sportsman's paradise, and it crossed the line into providing private military security services after 9/11. It was contracted on a covert contract to go inside of Afghanistan and send a small team of special forces operators inside near the Pakistan border. In fact, the owner of the company, Eric Prince himself, is a former Navy SEAL, and he went in with that initial deployment. Blackwater's executives also are deeply connected to the Bush administration, and Mr. Prince himself is a major bankroller of the political campaigns of the president as well as his political allies. And the sort of a cracking moment was when Blackwater, and not the U.S. military, was tasked with providing security for Paul Bremer. That initial no-bid contract really kicked off the boon to the point where the Times of London said that in post-war Iraq, oil is not the major business, it's private security.
Mm-hmm. And Sarah Percy, it's not like anybody really planned this. Has it been sort of ad hoc, making it up as you go along?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think it very much has. One of the things which is really interesting about this industry is the way it's evolved, apparently with no foresight and no policy planning on the part of government, where you started with the privatization of logistical tasks, so meals and laundry, and then it just spiraled and spiraled and spiraled until gradually we have the whole host of operations privatized that we see today. But at no stage has there ever been a serious conversation about what it means for the state to privatize these services and whether or not it's really quite different to privatize laundry than it is to privatize armed guards.
Neil, if I could just follow up on that?
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, right now, and I think most Americans remain unaware of this fact, and I find it a startling statistic, that in Iraq right now, there are about 180,000 private contractors that perform a wide range of duties from the private security all the way to doing the laundry for the troops. There are about 170,000 U.S. troops. That now means that the U.S. military is the junior partner in the occupying coalition. And what I see as the bigger picture here is that the Bush administration has replaced a coalition building with nation states with simply hiring out the private sector to occupy a country. And that's why I say it really calls into question the very existence of the nation state. This is an entirely new model, mm-hmm. the dramatic sort of dwarfing of the official forces through the use of these private companies.
I can understand your point on the use of force. Clearly, these are not in uniform. They're not American military personnel. But in terms of occupying the country, are you defending diplomatic personnel? Is that per se an occupation?
Well, you see, one of the things that I think is really disturbing here is that there are personnel drawn from 100 countries around the world that are working for these private companies in Iraq. So that's the internationalization of the occupation. And in some cases, Blackwater, for instance, has hired armed soldiers from countries whose home government is opposed to the Iraq war, as was the case with Chile. Blackwater hired up guards from a country who declined to participate in the coalition of the willing. I mean, ultimately, that is a violation of the sovereignty of the democratically elected government of Chile, which the Bush administration recognizes. And that's where I think we get into some really tricky international politics.
But there's a big question here as to whether or not this is really new, because, of course, on the battlefield of the 19th century, and particularly on the battlefield of the 18th century, we saw this degree of privatization.
And we called them Hessians, didn't we?
And we called them Hessians, we called them mercenaries, we called them all sorts of things. But the point is that states stopped doing this for a reason. States consciously made a decision to move away from the use of private force. And one of the reasons Jeremy's identified is it makes neutrality really complicated. It involves you in a war that you might not want to be involved in. And there were a number of other problems. And I think sometimes we don't look enough at why states stopped doing this when we started doing it again.
Jeremy Scahill, thank you very much for your time today. We appreciate it.
I appreciate it.
Jeremy Scahill's book is Blackwater, The Rise of the World's Most Powerful Mercenary Army. He joined us from our bureau in New York City. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And joining us now is Paul Wood, Managing Director for International Security Operations, including work in Afghanistan and Iraq, for Garda World, a company based in Canada. And Paul Wood, it's very good of you to be with us today.
Thanks very much. It's a pleasure.
You're a large company with many subsidiaries. We want to talk about your security operations in specific in Iraq. How many personnel do you have there? What do they do?
Yeah, we've got about 250 personnel working for us in Iraq at the moment. And they are a mixture of local nationals and expatriates, largely former British military and intelligence operators. And we provide a role in support of the reconstruction effort by providing security and risk management services to companies that are development companies or construction companies that have been contracted to improve the power and water supply or to provide advice on education and so on. And we provide them with a security solution that allows them to go about their business. So we provide a critical role to enable them to actually make a difference in Iraq.
And I know you've been able to listen to at least the last few minutes of the conversation. How do you respond to the kinds of allegations you're hearing? Obviously, there are a lot of companies that are much bigger than yours here, but mercenaries raising questions about neutrality and about the use of force.
Yeah, I mean, it's a difficult issue. And from our perspective, we see our role as being a critical component of the efforts to stabilize Iraq and to assist in the development of Iraq in the future. By providing the kind of services we provide, there are a lot of different types of security companies working in Iraq, and each of those companies takes a different approach. Some of them take a very high profile and aggressive stance in the way they deliver their services. Other companies like ourselves take a much more low profile approach. And I lived in Iraq for 3 years running our security operations. And one of our prerogatives is that we adopted a culturally sensitive approach and a very low profile approach to the way we do business, which is avoidance-based and intelligence-driven. And that approach has worked really well for us, and it works in harmony with the efforts of the clients that we work alongside. But
nevertheless, this is dangerous work. Four of your security contractors and one of your clients were kidnapped in May in Baghdad.
They were, yeah. I mean, it is a hazardous environment, and that is a problem for us, which we're trying to address. And previous to that, we also had two of our operators killed in a vehicle-borne bomb on the road to the airport. So we're familiar with the risks that we faced in trying to do this work, but we try everything we possibly can to mitigate against those risks and protect our clients.
Would it be possible for you to operate in the absence of some legal protection like Order 17?
I think regulation and legal protection is very important. I know the Iraqi government, especially at the moment with the news in the media about Blackwater and so on, are pushing hard to make sure that they take control of the regulatory process for private security companies, which is something that we've always been compliant with and we agree with. Companies that are operating in Iraq must be culturally sensitive. They must conduct themselves professionally, and they should be accountable for their actions. We have had, fortunately, a very good safety record in Iraq. We have never injured or shot any civilians, and we're very proud of that.
Paul Wood, thanks very much for your time today. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Paul Wood, Managing Director for International Security Operations for Garda World. He joined us by phone from here in Washington, D.C. And I'm afraid, Sarah Percy, that's all the time we have. And I want to thank you for your time as well.
Thank you.
Sarah Percy is the author of the forthcoming book, Mercenaries, The History of a Norm in International Relations. She's a university lecturer and fellow in international relations at Merton College in Oxford and joined us from the studios of the BBC in Oxford. Coming up after the break, we're going to be talking with our political junkie, Ken Rudin. Give us a call if you've got questions about the week in politics. And boy, what a week. 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email us, talk@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. Stay with us. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.